Hi, it's Karen Webster for payments.com, and I'm here today with Clark Kayat, EVP and Group Head of Enterprise Commercial Payments at KeyBank, and Ken Gaverty, Head of Product and Innovation at KeyBank as well. Clark and Ken, thanks for joining me today.
Happy to be here. Thanks, Karen.
So let's talk about two things that I think have generated a lot of interesting news and noise of late, and that's banking and innovation. So let's start with a couple of questions about new entrants into the banking space, because I think banking has taken on a bit of a different definition, and I'm sure you'll agree. There are lots of new players that are approaching banking on both the retail banking side and the commercial banking side in very different ways. PayPal, Facebook, Apple is even rumored to be getting into the P2P space. How do you look at players like that in delivering quote-unquote banking services?
So this is Clark. I'll take a shot at it, and then I'm sure Ken will jump in. So I think, look, a couple things. One, the landscape, as you said, has expanded materially in terms of who offers the services, and I think the definition of what a banking service is fairly muddied today versus what it used to be. And I think that's just a function of the folks like Apple or Samsung or PayPal or PayPal's alias Venmo all coming in and finding ways to facilitate payments across consumer to consumer, business to business, whatever the case may be, and just making that simple, right? So at the end of the day, the customer cares less about who's providing the service and cares a lot more about what the service is. So I think that trend will continue. I think as a bank, it has to wake us up to the fact that we're competing not necessarily with just other banks, but frankly with anybody who's putting an experience in front of a consumer or a company that is a better experience than what banks have traditionally provided. So really, it's opened the door to force us to think differently about how we engage clients. I think the benefit from our standpoint is that it forces us to think about where the value is in the process and not just the things that we have to offer and how many of them we need to sell or distribute. It forces us to sit back and say, okay, for us to win this game, we got to provide value. And I think what those companies do well is identify pain points for clients and they solve them.
I want to ask you a question about whether you think there's a difference between that perception of innovation and delivery on the retail banking side versus the commercial banking side. Is there a difference?
Yeah, this is Ken. I would certainly say that on the consumer side, there's a lot more press around that innovation, and by virtue of that, it feels a bit more pervasive. What I would say is what we see on the business side, whether it's business consumers, consumers to business, or the business to business side, that there are a significant number of pain points in the industry that really have not been looked at or solved for over the years. And so as Clark talked about, we have a lot more capital coming into the space today, and some of that is because of computing power that's readily available, the SaaS nature of a number of these platforms. So you have a lot more people looking at those pain points. And there is a proliferation of solutions out there that both offer a lot of options to those companies, but also makes it very confusing for those companies because it's hard to evaluate what solution is appropriate for them. So what I would say, in circling back on that question, there's a tremendous amount of innovation on the business side, but it may not receive the amount of press or public notice that the consumer side has today.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And let's dig into that in just a little bit more detail. So what are those pain points and how are banks positioned to solve for that?
Yeah, so look, I think in the commercial space, which I think is where you're directing that on the pain point side, I think it's much more about the financial operations and the workflow of business than it is about the payment itself. So historically, we, the banks, have provided the payment. We clear the check. We put the card in place, we send the ACH, whatever that may be, you know, we reconcile the files. But all the work that goes up to that point, whether it's invoicing, whether it's a procure-to-pay process, you know, whatever those various financial operations are that feed into that payment, have historically not been the purview of the banks. They've been the big ERP systems and, you know, down to the world of QuickBooks and other providers, most of which are not banks. In fact, probably all of them are not banks. And the proliferation, as Ken mentioned, of the SaaS-based services have largely been where they've connected to the payment. They've been around these upfront workflow processes. And if you talk to a CFO or a controller or, you know, an AP manager in a business, the thing that they mostly care about is make my day easier, make my information better, make my process go more efficiently, because the payment piece is pretty easy.
Is the payment piece really easy, or is the payment piece easy because it's familiar? And I'm thinking about how many checks are still used, you know, on the business side of business, especially the small business side of business. Aren't checks a real source of friction on the payment side?
So this is Ken. What I would say is it is a source of friction, but it's surprising still the number of companies that don't recognize it as a friction or recognize what the opportunity to streamline those processes could look and feel like in an organization. So I think when we're in front of customers, you say things like streamline, and you might get a glazed over look from the CFO or the treasurer. But the reality is when you think about the cost of a check being anywhere from $2 to $20, depending on the organization, the number of people that are touching it, and then even the physical costs associated with the printing of that check, the ink of that check, the stamp, the mail, the envelope itself, there are so many points that as you walk through this, it becomes a much more palatable conversation to say, okay, well, let's do the estimation of what that means to me. And then when you think about the alternative solutions, whether it's something as simple as ACH or these next generation payments, whether it's card oriented or some of the portal capabilities that we're moving toward now, I think that becomes much more palatable as they begin to understand what it could mean to their business.
Well, and I know that a big trend now is the traditional financial institutions partnering with innovators who have some of these solutions and perhaps not the distribution, maybe not even the trust factor that businesses feel in doing business with a new company. I mean, to your point, eyes glaze over when you start talking about streamlining and becoming more efficient. I know this is something that KeyBank is focused on as well. Talk to us a little bit about that as a trend, and specifically how you guys have approached partnering with these technology-driven organizations that are out to solve some of these points of friction that you described.
So, you know, from our perspective, you know, there's a couple things. One, our real mission in working with our customers is to help them run their business better every day, right? So we wake up with a view on how do we make their life better, easier, faster, whatever the right definition of better is. And the reality we've learned is some of these fintech companies have gotten out in front of the payment. And again, it's through a lot of these financial operations practices and processes, whether it's, you know, just the AP process or receivables or any of these, the workflow that gets you to the payment. And by virtue of that, and I take your point on payments are not always easy, even though I said that, I think sometimes people don't know how hard they are because they don't know what the alternative is. But the ability to affix the payment process to the end of whatever this fintech company is delivering, that's relatively straightforward. So what we found, you know, 12, 18 months ago is we were talking to clients who were essentially picking some of these SaaS-based solutions. They were pretty happy with, you know, whatever the value proposition was. And we were finding out that they were executing on a payment at the end of this process. And we had sort of been disintermediated from the conversation and we didn't even know it because we weren't having the upfront downstream conversation about the process. We were coming in to say, hey, we want to talk to you about your payments. And those, you know, those decisions had been made because whatever the fintech solution was had a payment execution on the end of it. And so our view was, hey, if we don't find a way to get out in front of that conversation, we're going to end up with no clients left because they're all picking these upfront value proposition providers and they're not banks.
Interesting. So for you, the partnership was a way to get inserted into the conversation and create almost a solution that was a portfolio of things that you deliver as well as a partner would deliver in addition to that.
This is Ken. I'd probably also add to that, it frees up our time as an organization to focus on the advice to the customer. So when we find software partners that wake up every day thinking about solving a particular pain point, it allows our payment advisors and our experts in the business to start thinking about the holistic financial operation of a company and to be an advisor where we can say, here are the in-house solutions that we provide that help solve some of those problems. And on the landscape of emerging payment providers, here are some of the solutions that are out there. Let us help you navigate which ones are important to your business. So we want to be in the relationship and the advice business and help our clients pick the right end solution.
So, you know, often banks are criticized for not being innovative, and I'm sure you've heard that more than once. When you are dealing with innovators who are coming to you or you're going to them, how do you reconcile the differences in perception, perhaps, of not so innovative bank, highly innovative entrepreneur coming together just to serve a customer, whether that's a retail consumer or whether that is a business customer?
I think you've written on this, Karen, so I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but the fintech model these days does appear to be pick an industry and a very specific problem to solve in that industry so that the company can demonstrate traction against a defined problem, right? And then the growth strategy is, hey, that's a really big problem, so we can expand or we can apply this solution to a bunch of different industries or a bunch of different problems. So the reality is most of the companies that we've seen are fairly targeted in the solution they provide. It's to an industry in a particular part of the process, and they've got a fairly discrete solution, which gets to your distribution point, right? It's sometimes hard to launch a very discrete solution. For us, we tend to go to market by industry, and because of that, we can find these solutions that are often driven to an industry and add them to a broader suite of services and help solve the problem they're focused on, right? So we're getting a very complementary combination there where they have a very discrete solution for a client base we serve, and we can put those two together. So I think the initial conversation around that partnership is, hey, whether you're innovative and we're not, or vice versa, you have something our clients need, and we have clients that need the thing you have. So it's a fairly natural place to start the conversation. And then the disparate nature of being innovative or not comes down to what does that partnership model actually look like? And what we found is as long as we're willing to be a little more flexible and a little more helpful to that innovative company in terms of coming into a bank environment, because as you know, coming into a bank regulatory environment today as a kind of third-party technology vendor is not simple. But if we can be flexible about how that happens and we can help them do that, meaning, you know, we'll help you get through this audit versus, hey, fill out 500 pages and tell us when you're done. We have found a lot of receptivity to them to do that because they know there's a big opportunity with the client base we have.
So you mentioned something that I want to dig into, regulation. Obviously, the regulatory environment and banking is really difficult and getting more difficult in many different ways. You can help solve those problems for a young company that doesn't have the bandwidth to do it themselves, and you provide a very interesting way to solve for that. But how does regulation influence the decisions that you're making with respect to innovation generally?
So what I'd say overall is that we interact with our customers in a way where it starts with understanding the pain point. And from there, as we start to identify the partner companies that may make sense for us to spend time with, incorporate into our overall solution, or whether we determine it's something that's in-house that, you know, we have the chassis today and we want to build additional capabilities on. In either of those scenarios, we have an incredibly robust risk management infrastructure that we have to go through. And we don't view that as an obstacle. We view it as a competitive advantage because the regulations are what they are. And I think the opportunity for us to be able to navigate them well, professionalize an emerging payment company, as you suggested, Karen, to help them understand to what degree they need to beef up those capabilities to get through that process, but additionally to be able to do it with a speed to market to make sure that as these innovative ideas are being developed, we can get through that process in a timely manner is one of the things that I think we understood was going to be important to this strategy, have focused on, and now have created a pretty good process around it.
And I would add to that, Karen, I think to just an extension of Ken's last point there, what we've realized is to go down this path, if it's going to be a core part of your strategy, which it is for us, you need to build some different skills than you would have if your main intent was to develop the solution. So, you know, if your technology capabilities historically have been around, you know, hey, I developed the software, the capability, for us, it's much more about assessing the quality of the technology and then building the integration between what this partner does and what our core solutions look like so that it can feel seamless to the client. And then on top of that, there's and we're all as banks adding risk management capabilities, but our ability to invest in and understand and make a competitive advantage out of managing a third party is a huge aspect of this. And it's both from the third party standpoint, it's from the client standpoint, and it's from our internal risk and regulatory standpoint, the ability to say, hey, we know how to identify the right partner, onboard them, bring them into our ecosystem, and then deliver them to a client in a way that feels good to the client.
Yeah, and that's certainly a huge benefit for the innovator as well, that has limited resources and bandwidth themselves and doesn't have to worry about getting into an environment where their opportunity is not going to be maximized either. So here we are, at the end of 2015, it's been a really exciting year in payments on both the retail and commercial side of payments, and we're looking at 2016. Just a couple of minutes from you both on 2015, the things that really stood out for you in terms of game changers in payments and how you're looking at 2016, what's on your roadmap? Clark?
So 2015, I think, and I'm trying to think out loud here about the kind of the difference between consumer and commercial. So, and I'm going to get to that purposely to drive my 2016 point of view. But, you know, on the consumer side, right, I think it's really been the year of, you know, Apple Pay, Samsung Pay. It's been the driving everything through the phone, you know, behavior, right? And I think that's the thing that grabs the headlines probably to a degree greater than the actual impact, right? It's very marketable. It's very, sexy to talk about. Has it hit, you know, these really huge breakpoints? You know, hard to tell, but it clearly has grabbed the mind share of folks. On the commercial side, as an extension of that, I think the real change that I've seen is whether or not the technology company ultimately provides the solution has almost become irrelevant, right? What they've done, and let's use Square as an example. Square has fundamentally changed the expectation of clients, right? Whatever the service is, they see it and they want it, and they don't really care who provides it, but they expect you to provide it. So what I think, you know, I've seen more than anything in 2015 is just the speed with which customers' preferences and expectations change and how that can be influenced by a new technology provider who may not necessarily be around 3 or 6 or 12 months from now, but the fact that they introduced the capability or an experience irrevocably changes the client's expectations. And now as a provider who is stable and is here, we have to find a way to deliver that on that expectation. So that's been sort of my experience for 2015 in terms of what I've seen and where that drives me to 2016. And I think the way we're trying to continue to stay ahead of this is, and I'll use a phrase that is a mouthful, but it's a phrase we've used a lot here, which is the consumerization of the commercial environment. So historically, as we all know, big companies change more slowly, and they change more slowly because there's lots of human beings there, and changing human behavior is hard and takes time, and it's expensive, right? So if we at KeyBank want to change our operating system, there's 14,000 people whose laptops and computers have to be changed out, and that's expensive and time-consuming. Whereas at the small business end, you know, I have less friction, I can make a decision, and I can change today. But what I think will drive the real adoption in the commercial environment is when the behavior I'm asking you to take on is one that you're already doing personally. So if I'm going to approve a wire on my phone, I'm kind of used to approving things on my phone. I'm going to take a picture of a check at work, and deposit it. I do that at home, and so I'm not learning a new behavior. I'm just applying it in my commercial setting. And I think the more we see those applications showing up in the commercial environment, the faster they will be adopted and the more powerful they'll become, because you don't have to teach people to do new things. They're just doing it in a different environment.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's a very, very good point. Ken?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously it echoes the points that Clark raised, maybe a couple more that might be implicit in there. The fintech investment that has occurred both in the U.S. and globally, I think it's sort of widely known that you've got three times the amount that we saw in 2014 than we had in the year prior to that. And in 2015 looks like it's going to be quite similar. So you have a tremendous amount of capital flowing into this world because, again, I think they understand that there are pain points that haven't been solved, and there are profit pools that are pretty sizable that these venture capital and private equity groups are going after. So I think that's one. And I think if you look at the bank's response to that as well, you'll see a trend really of a lot of your larger banks all announcing, you know, fairly high profile innovation officers. So it's becoming, you know, quite noticeable that in addition to thinking more innovatively inside of these companies to compete with those emerging technology companies, you also need to make sure that you've got a function internally that's always being mindful of what's occurring externally and where do these partnerships make sense to create. So I think that's what I see on the broader scale. And then from a product perspective, it's really been interesting to see, you know, if you think about what occurred at Sibos in 2014 and the discussion of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency and really how pervasive that became in early 2015 to really a transition then to more of the blockchain technology and what maybe the future uses of that may be. And there's a lot of pilots that are occurring around our industry of alternative uses. So it was interesting to see that trend from cryptocurrency to baseline technology. And then finally, maybe leading into our 2016 roadmap, a little bit more near term is this focus on automation, insights, and analytics. So I think there's been a lot of discussion over the last 3 to 5 years on moving from paper to electronic payments. And as we've talked about throughout this discussion, certainly what occurs before that in the workflows, but we're starting to see the transition of built capabilities and conversations that are moving toward how do we start to automate these workflows, automate the payment and the reconciliation. And then as we're beginning to move toward that automation, it creates better visibility into data that can then be used to manage the business better.
I mean, I think you make a couple of really interesting points, both of you. I think innovation is just hard. It's complicated, and it isn't the purview of just one, you know, individual or even one company inside an ecosystem. It really is an ecosystem. And I think, as you've cited, understanding how to play well within an ecosystem is really becoming a defining moment for how innovation gets commercialized and ultimately is successful. I do think that data is really going to become products or inform the development of new products, and that's clearly an area of opportunity. And we almost got to the end of a conversation without mentioning the B word, Bitcoin. But we did, but we got there, and I agree with you.
Happy to check that box for you, Karen.
Thankfully, we've moved past the "we need a new currency called Bitcoin" to something that is a distributed ledger kind of an opportunity, which I think has potential as long as Bitcoin isn't involved with it. But Clark and Ken, it was really very nice to talk with you today. Thanks very much for your time.
Well, we appreciate it and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks, Karen.
Thank you. Me too.